This is a Podvic recording of the Rough Edges series, a BBC TV Sherlock and Black Books crossover fanfic series by Basingstoke. It's read by Myfic. Padding. Sherlock was carrying a folding hand truck slung across his back. John didn't bother asking Sherlock where they were going anymore. He just followed and trusted that they would go someplace interesting. Besides, it was a nice warm day for a walk. Sherlock stopped at a bookshop off Russell Square, sandwiched between a wine bar and a defunct hairdresser. "Black Books?" John asked. "Looks like a dump."
"It is a dump," Sherlock said, but went in anyway.
The shop was a good size, but reeked horribly of cigarette smoke, wine, mould and sick. "Are you sure you want to buy something here?" John asked.
"No, but I promised," Sherlock said. "You can sterilise it when we get home."
"Who did you promise? Baal?" John lifted his foot. The floor resisted with a squelching, toffee-like suction and a fetid smell.
"Close. Mummy."
"Oh." John looked around. He still couldn't find a shop attendant. There was a desk at the back with a cash register that was old without being called. Mid-80s, bad time for technology. A wired phone with the wire cut and patched back together, a green banker's lamp, and 6 empty bottles of cheap wine. A blackboard hung on the wall stated, "Strictly no Doctor Who." Around them, shelves everywhere, a concrete bust of someone in a very large wig, what looked awfully like fossilised octopuses stuck to the pipes and, ooh, Victorian medical texts. John pulled down a copy of Psychopathia Sexualis with teeth marks on the cover. Sherlock said. John looked over and found him examining a shelf filled with the complete 1989 edition Oxford English Dictionary. "How are we meant to get that home?" John asked. "I'll tell you up front, I can't carry that much up the stairs."
"Taxi. Pulley system. I'll figure it out," Sherlock said.
A scream sounded from the back room. John reached for his gun before he realised he wasn't carrying it. A man lurched into the shop from the curtained back room.
"No! No, you can't! Vandals! Barbarians!" he shouted, falling over the desk chair. "Manny! Attack! We're under attack!"
John set down the book and walked around the desk carefully. The man, black-haired, long black coat, decent suit, a similar style to Sherlock, in fact, lay on the floor, batting at the desk leg. John checked his vitals. A stout man with long blonde hair and Hawaiian shirt leapt through the curtain holding a mop.
"Yah!"
"Hiya," John said.
"Oh my God, are you a customer?"
The blonde man dropped the mop.
"Bernard, a customer. Bernard, are you dead? Oh no."
"No," John said. "I'm a doctor. I can verify he's just extremely drunk."
"Oh, that's all right then."
"We'd like to buy some books. We'd like to pay you a lot of money," Sherlock said, staring fixedly at the ceiling. John looked up.
There was a viscous brown stain on the ceiling, between the hanging lamp and the joist. John looked back at the drunken Bernard. When he looked back up, because Sherlock was still staring, the stain was located on the opposite side of the lamp.
"Right."
John put Bernard in the recovery position. Bernard screamed and flailed upright, sending John jumping back.
"No! Customers! No!"
"Bernard!"
the blonde man shouted.
"We must sell books! We must!" "No!"
"I would like to pay you £1,000, Sherlock said loudly and clearly.
Bernard silenced. He sat in the desk chair.
"Manny."
"Yes, Bernard," said the blonde man.
"I grant you permission to sell this man a book."
"I think he wants more than one, Bernard."
"One book!"
Bernard screamed.
Manny petted his forehead soothingly.
"Just close your eyes and it will soon be over."
He hummed into Bernard's ear. Over Bernard's head he jerked his chin at Sherlock frantically. Sherlock opened up his hand truck and piled the 20 volumes of the OED inside. Considerately, he topped the pile with the volume of Psychopathia Sexualis that John had been looking at. He dropped a folded pile of 50-pound notes on the desk in front of Bernard. Bernard fell on them like a starving dog.
"Run,"
Manny Stage whispered. Sherlock was already hauling the truck outside. John followed, Manny backing up behind him, eyes on Bernard. Once John stepped outside the door, Manny slammed it shut and locked it. A moment later, the money hit the glass window in the door, and Bernard followed, spitting and clawing at the glass. Manny tackled him. Bernard flung him off and grabbed the door handle again. The door rattled in the frame.
"Taxi!" Sherlock called.
"Christ, it's like Dawn of the Dead," John said. He watched the men struggle.
"Sherlock, why..."
The taxi arrived. Sherlock shoved the books inside, then the hand truck, then himself, ushering John in as an afterthought. John ended up sitting on volumes 10 and 12.
"Baker Street, please."
"He's my cousin," Sherlock said. The door shattered, and Bernard, bleeding, lurched into the street as the taxi pulled away.
"Stop," John yelled. "He's hurt."
"No, keep going. He has money. That's what he's for," Sherlock said, throwing a 20-pound note over the seat at the cabbie, who duly continued driving.
John sighed. "Sherlock."
"John?"
"Actually, I can see the resemblance," John said. "Wild dark hair, good suit, mad as a spoon, with a live-in caretaker." John was suddenly suspicious of his place in Sherlock's life.
"So your mother gave you money to spend at your cousin's shop?"
"Yes, well deduced," Sherlock said sardonically.
"Because he doesn't get a lot of custom?"
"Not much at all," Sherlock said.
"Because he's drunk and insane?"
"Mummy's side of the family is all like that."
"Hmm," John said.
Sherlock wrinkled his nose. "Not our side. I don't drink. It dulls the senses."
"Hey," the cabbie said, "that bloke's still chasing us."
John looked over his shoulder to see Bernard, bloodied and furious, staggering down the street in their direction. Manny followed him, waving a bottle of wine.
"Step on it," Sherlock said, handing him another 20.
"You know, that Manny fellow seems familiar. I think I treated him once."
John tended to remember his patients, by their faces at least. "First case of Dave syndrome I ever saw."
"Yes, I saw the earlobes," Sherlock said.
"Dave syndrome?" the cabbie said nervously. "That bloke has Dave syndrome?"
"You'd better go then, hadn't you?"
"No, not left," Sherlock said, but the cabbie had already turned left.
"Shortcut, mate."
"No, it's not. The light is 17 seconds longer between 1600 and 1800. Don't you know anything?"
Sherlock was right, of course. They were stuck for what seemed like an eternity. As John looked out the rear window with no little concern, he saw Bernard staggering along the pavement, but he couldn't see Manny. He hoped the man hadn't hurt himself or overheated. A bottle of wine smashed across the windshield. The cabbie screamed. Sherlock threw himself over the books. Manny pounded on the driver's window, hooting like a gibbon. The passenger door on John's side opened. He hadn't locked it. Bugger!
"Books!" Bernard moaned. "My books!"
The cabbie wailed. "Oh, fuck! He's coming through the windshield!"
"Bernard!" Sherlock shouted. "Drink!"
Bernard's attention snapped from the books to Sherlock. Sherlock waved a flask in the air, and Bernard's eyes followed it. He threw the flask over John's head. Bernard pushed away from the car. Manny, though, was still slavering and pawing at the windshield.
"Dave syndrome! He must have overheated as he ran!" John yelled at Sherlock. "He needs an ice pack and some chocolate!"
Sherlock shook his head. "I'm out of decoys. Just drive."
"No way, man. If I run him over, that's me up the stick," the cabbie said.
Manny wrenched the driver's door open and hauled the cabbie screaming out into the street. John looked into his bloodshot eyes and felt true fear. Manny drawled on the driver's seat.
"You..."
John shoved Sherlock down. He was the soldier, after all. Maybe if he distracted Manny, Sherlock could get away.
"Forgot.
Your receipt!
Manny breathed hoarsely. He dropped a yellow carbon copy paper over the seat and climbed back out. Right. Your finger is in my ear, Sherlock said. John removed it. Then Manny, in the grips of Dave syndrome, flipped the taxi. Sherlock took the full brunt of the OED. He started taping together the torn pages the moment he was released from hospital, his left hand splintered and his face swollen with purple bruises. John had, after all, carted the volumes upstairs himself. He was still icing his back. John received a phone call. Lestrade, he thought, but no. Manny and Bernard were safely contained in hospital, detoxing, and for now it wasn't a police matter. No, it was Mycroft. No, John answered. We're not doing any errands for at least a week. I only called for information, Mycroft said. How did you find Bernard? Mad, drunk, raving. Normal, then. Also, Irish. Don't tell me you're actually Irish. Uncle Black is. And you didn't warn us about the Dave syndrome, John yelled. It was only 75 degrees. This couldn't have been foreseen, Mycroft said calmly. Don't worry. Sherlock's turn won't come again for at least another year. So when Sherlock and I met, was that an accident? Because I'm seeing some similarities. I treated that fellow Manny. He was an accountant, John accused. An accountant for a failing bookshop owner. Tell me, does your mother have a bosom companion who's a groom? Does your mad cousin Edward have a live-in policeman? Mummy lives with her dear friend Olivia, who's a beekeeper, Sherlock said. Mad cousin Edmund, actually, and he's a hairdresser in Cannes. He rooms with his colourist, Mycroft said. Christ, it's a conspiracy! John hung up without a farewell. He crossed his arms. I don't want to be your nanny. We didn't hijack you. You walked in. Did you know? John demanded. No, not until I saw you. And as soon as you saw me, you thought, oh, there's my new Jeeves, brilliant, wonder if he's armed. No, I thought, there's the man my brother found. He's unexpectedly interesting. If Mycroft's right, I'm going to be really irritated. Then he was right. You were the butch to my Sundance, and that's why I'm so bloody annoyed with him all the time. Because he's always right, do you get it now? Sherlock said. I like you. He huffed out his breath and bent over his new books. I like you a lot, he muttered. Oh, God, John said. He looked at the ceiling, at the stain from Sherlock's last experiment. I like you too. He crossed the room and hugged Sherlock from behind. Ow! Ow! Get off me! John kissed the top of his head. I'm hurt, and you're touching me, Sherlock complained. Manny! Bernard wailed in his padded room. Bernard! Drink! I miss you. I love you. I need a fag, Manny! Mycroft sighed and turned off the surveillance monitor. Family. Such a chore. Dr. Watson is hugging Sherlock, his assistant reported. Mycroft smiled. The end. Pillow by Basingstoke. John let Sherlock answer the door, which was a mistake. I don't drink wine, John heard him say in his poshest and least welcoming voice. John ran down the stairs.
Sorry, he heard. Very sorry. Very, very sorry. For you are my cousin and family. Family.
Oh, it was that Bernard bloke, carrying a bottle of wine and a ribbon, flanked by Manny and by a very attractive woman indeed. Hi, yes, come in, John said, reaching around Sherlock's waist and shaking hands with all three. Don't mind him. Woke up on the wrong side of the casket. Hmm, Sherlock said, turning and climbing the stairs.
We're so sorry, Manny said, sounding panicked.
Come up and have a cup of tea, John said. After all, it hadn't been him buried under the complete Oxford English Dictionary in an upturned cab. He was inclined to be magnanimous.
I'm Fran. I was in Paris, the woman said. They forgot to eat.
No, I wasn't allowed to leave the shop. I made soup out of library paste and snails, Manny cried.
John smiled. He gestured them upstairs and put the kettle on.
Sherlock was sulking with his violin.
Fran started to approach him. Hi, I'm Fran. I work in...
But Sherlock did something complicated with his bow that kept her beyond arm's length.
Sales, she said.
Alas, poor Yorick, Manny said, looking at the skull on the shelf. I knew him well.
I knew him Horatio, Sherlock corrected. He spat something intricate and elegant from the violin.
I was just going to say that, Fran said. She tried approaching Sherlock again, but the action of his bow finally dissuaded her. She retreated across the flat to the kitchen.
Bernard stood in the middle of the living room, weaving slowly back and forth.
So, you're my cousin. Are you my sister's brother? I mean, my father's uncle's son?
He counted on his fingers.
My mother's sister's brother?
Sherlock flourished his bow.
No,
he said.
My sister's uncle's cousin?
Manny approached Bernard and led him to the chair.
Oh, hello. My name is Bernard. So nice to meet you.
He shook hands with Manny. Sherlock switched to something jagged and nerve-wracking. Stravinsky, John thought.
You're my mother's father's sister's grandson, Sherlock said. We've met a dozen times. Do try to remember.
Yes, dear, Bernard said and passed out in the chair.
I see the detox didn't take, Sherlock muttered.
John called over.
Oh, Manny, how are you feeling? How's the Dave syndrome?
I have my condition under control. I had my fudge this morning, Manny said.
Good, good.
John set out 5 mugs. Had to wash 2 of them. And found the tea bags once he removed the rubbing alcohol.
Did they have milk?
They had milk. He got the milk out and found Fran leaning seductively against the wet sink.
So, Fran said, you are?
Her hand slipped and she banged her elbow on the sink.
Ow! 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 Fucking ow!
She hopped up and down in front of the sink. John took her elbow and rubbed it.
I'm a doctor, as it happens. Dr. John Watson.
Really? Properly a doctor?
Army doctor. I have a pension and a bullet wound and everything.
He rubbed her arm a little more slowly and tried the seductive smile, the one that said he was sensitive and caring and not at all mad, despite living with Sherlock.
Would you care to shag? Fran asked.
Absolutely, John said. Sherlock stopped playing with an abrupt screech.
Fran! No, Fran! Don't leave me here! Manny said.
John ushered Fran through the kitchen door and up to his bedroom. The kettle boiled. In the morning, John woke up first. Fran curled up beside him, snoring. He ventured downstairs to put on some tea and toast and see if there was anything in the way of proper food. He found Sherlock and his cousin Bernard sitting in the living room, Bernard working a sort of questionnaire on paper. After Bernard filled in each answer, Sherlock would read it and either nod or shock him with a little electronic wand.
Wrong.
Zap. And then Bernard would give a little wail.
Oh!
What's the voltage? John asked.
Safe, Sherlock said.
He leaned over and nodded at the paper. They had eggs, bread and severed fingers.
Oh, lovely. I can make an omelette, John muttered, shutting the fridge.
Where's Manny? He asked Sherlock.
My bed, Sherlock said savagely.
Wrong.
Zap.
Ah!
That was nice of you.
Zap.
Oh!
Sherlock didn't answer. John looked for the kettle, which was missing.
The electric element was there, but the kettle itself was not. He boiled water in the saucepan instead. The 5 mugs were still sitting out, as was the milk. John sniffed it suspiciously. Well, it didn't smell. "Did you have fun last night?" Sherlock asked. "Well, you were listening, you tell me." "Wrong. Zap.
Ah!"
"Don't try to tell me you weren't listening. I do know you," John said. "I wasn't talking to you."
"I'm done," Bernard cried. "Done, done, done."
He fell off the sofa. "Yes, with this test," Sherlock said. "Sherlock, let him be. It's not his fault he's your cousin. It's your aunt and uncle's." Upstairs, Fran stopped snoring and stirred. Then, unmistakably, she began singing Eye of the Tiger. Sherlock sniffed, jumped up, and walked swiftly into the kitchen to stare at the saucepan. "Stop it," John told Sherlock. "Stop what?" "That thing you're doing." "How helpful?" "Don't be jealous. She was flirting with you first."
"Ass," Sherlock said.
"I'm an ass? You're the one tasering your cousin for drunkenness." Feet on the stairs. Fran bounced down in her shirt and knickers, humming,
"La la 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 la, thrill of the fight. La 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 of the tiger."
She disappeared into the toilet. "I don't have a problem with your sexual antics," Sherlock said. "It's fine." "Yes, I can tell," John said. "I'm glad you're such a genital dynamo." "Sure," John said. "Perpetual motion machine, me." The sink ran and Fran emerged.
"Hello. What a lovely morning."
She kissed John. Sherlock glowered and leaned on John's back, one hand perched possessively on his shoulder. "Hi," John said. "Don't mind Sherlock."
"No," Fran said, looking past John at Sherlock. "Right. Good morning. Hi. You're not a couple, are you?"
Sherlock embraced John with his other arm as well.
"Sherlock," John warned.
"I'm just waiting for my tea."
"Eep," Fran said.
"Off, now." John tried to look at him, but all he could see was Sherlock's unshaven chin. Sherlock made a small growling noise, but got off him. He flung himself into a chair in the living room.
"Tea."
"He is a lot like Bernard," Fran said, watching Sherlock warily. "Where is Bernard?" "On the floor over there. Actually, is he okay, Sherlock?"
"Don't care."
"Your mum will care," John said, but he was already coming around to check. He found Bernard lying under the coffee table, asleep. Pulse seemed okay.
"What happened to your kettle?" Fran asked.
"I don't know. Sherlock, what happened to our kettle?" Sherlock flailed his hand and curled up in the chair, efficiently conveying that the only thing he cared less about in the world than cousins was kettles.
"If Bernard's still breathing, he's fine. He's come through much worse than that," Fran said.
"Is there a funnel for the water?"
John heard rattling and leaped up. "Don't touch anything on the table."
Sherlock stood up as well and marched on the kitchen like the Terminator. He took the funnel from Fran, dropped it in the sink, took the milk, stuck his finger in the liquid, and flicked one drop on the funnel. The funnel exploded. Sherlock returned to the living room and threw himself in the chair, staring at Fran.
"Oh," Fran said.
"I've got it," John said. He carefully poured the tea.
"I'm sorry, I have to break up with you," Fran said.
John looked at Sherlock. Sherlock looked at Fran.
"Your flatmate has a human skull and a very worrying stare, and a lot of things in here explode, so I'm breaking up with you before he kills me. Sorry, you're a lovely shag." She pecked him on the lips. "But I have to run away now. I'll just get my shoes."
Fran ran upstairs and returned with the rest of her clothes and her handbag.
"Just pop the boys in a taxi when they come round," she said, and escaped downstairs.
John looked at Sherlock. Sherlock smirked.
"If you keep this up, you're going to have to learn to get me off yourself," John said.
Tea, Sherlock commanded. On the floor, Bernard groaned. The end. Egg Crate by Basingstoke. Are you sure? Sherlock asked while they were still in the taxi. You can go home. I'd be relieved if you did. No, I'm going, John said.
It's going to be weird.
Yes, I know.
No, weirder than that.
Sounds like fun, John said.
Yes, you say that now.
The Holmes family manor was huge, of course, and surrounded by a massive iron fence, of course, and lit dramatically on the top of a hill by the setting sun, of course. There were towers, and statuary, and armed guards, one that John could see, probably 10 more that he couldn't, if he knew Mycroft at all, which he thought he was starting to. The taxi wasn't allowed past the gate.
Security, only family cars allowed in, Sherlock told John as he paid the cabbie.
Sorry, how long is this driveway?
1/2 mile.
I'm wearing new shoes and they pinch.
Well, that was silly of you. Why would you buy shoes that pinch?
So they walked up the tree-lined path by the long driveway, elbows brushing every third step or so, which meant that Sherlock was thinking about something else. He was usually more careful about appropriate personal space when he wasn't distracted. A figure covered in bees joined them from behind a wall.
Hello, Sherlock, it said, proving itself female.
The bees covering her leg shifted and swarmed like living cloth as she walked. She was holding something in her cupped and hopefully gloved hands. Her face was invisible behind the veil of bees.
Hello, Olivia. Isn't it a bit late for swarming season? Sherlock asked.
They're domestic. There is no season any more.
This is John. Don't sting him.
Olivia scoffed. The veil of bees disturbed and resettled over her mouthish area. The path forked. John and Sherlock walked toward the house, and Olivia walked behind it.
Lovely to meet you, John called.
He looked at Sherlock.
No, that wasn't weird. That was beekeeping, Sherlock said.
Yes, I know.
You didn't.
I watch a lot of television, Sherlock. The door opened as they walked up the polished stone steps. The butler bowed. Tall woman, muscular, short hair, probably armed. John wasn't sure he could take her in a fair fight. In an unfair fight, he would have Sherlock, and John would take on anyone with Sherlock.
Your mother awaits in the drawing room, sir, she said as she took their coats. And my father?
Uncertain, sir.
Oh, he's not under the table, is he? Sherlock sounded exasperated.
No, sir, but I am not certain of his whereabouts.
Sherlock sighed and straightened his cuffs and tie in the coatroom mirror. He straightened John's tie too and smoothed his hair.
If you change your mind, just let Hennemore know, Sherlock said. She'll call you a car.
I'm not running away.
I'm clarifying the exits.
He licked his fingers and rearranged John's fringe.
Would you announce us, Hennemore?
Hennemore led them out of the coatroom and down the hall, which was broad and full of more extravagant statuary. John saw where Sherlock acquired his sense of style. She paused in an open double door and announced, Sherlock Holmes and John Watson. So this was it then. John held himself straight as he walked in with Sherlock. He felt like they should be arm in arm, though of course that would give the wrong signals. Still, he felt somehow like one of them should be escorting the other. He saw Mycroft first, lounging on a sofa next to a busty older woman. His first thought was, wife? But no, that didn't seem right. Mycroft's assistant sat in the corner, working on her BlackBerry.
Mummy,
Sherlock said. He bent and kissed the woman. Oh. She was really quite extremely blonde and leopard print. and she had more cleavage than any two of John's past dates put together.
Baby boy, why haven't you brought John around earlier?
And she was American. This was getting, well, yes, Sherlock said it would be weird. Because I've been busy, and you embarrass me, Sherlock answered. Mycroft and Sherlock's mum both laughed.
I'm Tammy, darling,
Sherlock's mum said, offering John her hand. John shook it.
It's all right that you don't know where to put your eyes. I love a military man.
She winked. John looked at Sherlock for help. Sherlock looked back impassively.
I may have to lock you in the closet for later,
Tammy said and laughed again. Shall I make you a drink, John? No Rohypnol, I promise, Mycroft said, standing. Tammy guffawed. Another door opened, and John saw an adolescent boy walk through. He looked briefly around the room, squealed, and ran straight for Sherlock, embracing him from behind, face pressed to Sherlock's shoulder. Oh, hello, Darwin, Sherlock said.
The boy bounced up and down, and Sherlock did too.
Yes, I'm happy to see you too.
Darwin didn't answer. He hummed happily into Sherlock's coat. It's been 3 months, Sherlock said. Mycroft stood slightly in John's view, attracting his attention. He handed John a fizzy drink. Darwin's autistic. He's fully as intelligent as Sherlock, but doesn't speak. They're extremely fond of each other. He's very sensible, Sherlock said. Darwin tucked himself under Sherlock's arm, and they sat on the sofa together, Darwin's face still pressed into Sherlock's coat. How are lessons? Oh, I know. They never keep up, Sherlock said. John wasn't sure if Darwin was responding with his hands or some other way. John took a sip of his drink. It was pretty good, actually. Herbal and slightly bitter, not terribly alcoholic. Wollstonecraft is coming as well, Mycroft said. Sherlock and Darwin made identical grunts of disgust. Easter is still out with her new pony. Why on earth did you teach her to ride? How utterly useless! Teach her to drive, Sherlock said.
Excellent idea, darling, but she does so love ponies, Tammy said.
And she's 7, Mycroft added lightly. So you teach her to drive on a small car, Sherlock said. Darwin agrees with me. It can be a pony-shaped car. Darwin curled up into Sherlock's lap, like a much smaller boy than he was. Hi, John tried, perching on the arm of the sofa beside Sherlock. My name's John. I'm Sherlock's friend. Darwin looked up briefly and then screwed his eyes shut. He reached one hand across Sherlock. Can he feel your jacket? Sherlock translated. John gave Darwin his sleeve and the boy stroked it. I agree, Sherlock said, apparently to Darwin. But the colours aren't so good. Darwin let go and beat his hand against Sherlock's chest. He jiggled his legs, vibrating the entire couch. You're new, so you're a little overstimulating. Which I like, Sherlock said, grinning briefly. But Darwin doesn't. We agree on things, but deal with them differently. Tammy leaned over the couch and kissed both Sherlock and Darwin on the cheek.
My boys, she said fondly. Now don't fight with your sister.
Sister? John wondered briefly if they meant the 7-year-old, then realized Wollstonecraft must be a girl too. I won't fight with her if she doesn't fight with me, Sherlock said.
You're older. It's your job to behave.
Then why is it my fault when I fight with Mycroft?
Because Mycroft is behaving, Tammy said.
Don't be obstreperous. Her jewellery clanked as she crossed to the drinks table, pouring herself a large vodka with a splash of cranberry on ice.
Hannemore, she called.
The butler appeared in the doorway.
Find Nehemiah, please, and get an ETA on Wollstonecraft. I'm getting hungry.
The butler nodded once and vanished again. Sherlock was muttering to Darwin under his mother's voice.
I found a stolen jade by following paint and comparing books. John writes about it, but he leaves out all the interesting parts. Darwin nodded against Sherlock's jacket. Oh, Nanny showed you his blog? Are you learning to write? That would be smashing. Then we wouldn't have to use the webcam. No pixels. Sherlock glanced up at John. Darwin doesn't see images on the webcam, only pixels. And of course, once he said that, that's what I saw too. Now it just looks weird. Same for the phone. It's just mechanically modulated frequencies created through magnets and electrical signals. It's hard to listen to a voice when you hear the mechanics of reproduction. Darwin observes so much more than I do, but it means he understands less. Sherlock rubbed his shoulder. Whereas I observe and understand more than either of you, Mycroft said. Sherlock glared at him. Mycroft's assistant looked up and smiled.
Sherlock, we're going to have a nice dinner. I want to talk to your friend,
Tammy said. She took John's arm and drew him over to a chair beside her. She smelled like vodka. No perfume, though, which seemed odd. Allergies?
Now, you're a doctor. That's very good. Very well done. Sherlock needs someone to take care of him, she said, patting John's hand. Make sure he eats, and sleeps, and poops.
Mum, Sherlock said, sounding pained.
He eats too much junk food. It gets bound up. He doesn't like to eat his vegetables. He says the effort-to-nutrition ratio is inefficient, so you have to make him. I used to lock up his violin, unless he cleaned his plate.
John said. Sherlock wasn't even reacting. He had his eyes closed in silent agony. Yes. Mycroft checked his phone. Wollstonecraft just arrived, he said. A medium-tall man with curly iron-grey hair entered the room without waiting for the butler. A small Indian woman with an iPad followed him. They both wore white lab coats. Bonan Vesperon, Philoge, the man said. Good evening, Father, Mycroft said, shaking his hand. This was Nehemiah Holmes, then. The family resemblance was clear. Nenu? I still think Esperanto is ridiculous, Father, Mycroft said. Hear, hear. English is a fantastically flexible and useful language. It shows the history of the nation. We can take any word and make it English. And besides, it's aesthetically pleasing, which Esperanto most certainly is not, Sherlock said. Nehemiah shook his head and looked at his assistant mournfully. She set down her iPad and took a pair of tweezers and a bunch of plastic evidence bags out of her pocket. Without a word, she pulled out a small tuft of Mycroft's hair and carefully bagged and labelled it. She then moved on to Sherlock. John was surprised he allowed it, but he did. And then John himself, with a smile. "For the collection, if you please," she said to John. "Only if I get your name first. I like to know before I start giving DNA samples." "Mi volas teston pri chemiajoj, ne DNA," Nehemiah said. "We're not testing for DNA," the woman translated. Sherlock pointed accusingly. "There, you see? The word doesn't exist in Esperanto, so you have to use English. Ridiculous." Darwin whined and jittered on Sherlock's lap. "Sorry, sorry. I won't raise my voice again," Sherlock told his brother. "My name is Dr. D.V. Tripathi," the woman said. She pulled out John's hair by the root before he could further object. She looked at Tammy, but Tammy pointed a long pink-painted fingernail in her face, and Devi backed off.
"They have this argument every time the boys come home. They won't accept their father's little eccentricities," Tammy said. "He just likes things logical. English verbs bother him."
She sounded slightly slurred, but not nearly as slurred as she should have been with that much vodka inside her. "Deoxyribonucleic acido," Nehemiah said. He sighed again and sat in the corner,
across the table from Mycroft's assistant, opening a book from the nearby shelf. Devi slipped the hair samples into her pocket. John nursed his drink. The very thought of getting drunk in this house made him nervous. The butler showed in the door again, announcing,
"Wollstonecraft Holmes and Chalmers Gordon Gordons."
There were a couple of mouthfuls. Wollstonecraft was, in fact, a girl. She had the same dark, polished, expensive look as Mycroft and Sherlock, and the angular bone structure that made Sherlock look slightly alien made her look like an Italian fashion model. Chalmers had a similarly posh appearance, but in blonde, with straight, gleaming teeth and expensive cologne. John felt like Mr. Potato Head in comparison. Well, couldn't be helped. His face was his face. Wollstonecraft looked around 21, and Darwin looked around 14. Sherlock had just turned 29, and the unseen Easter was 7, but what did it mean? Why space your kids 7 years apart? And was Mycroft 35? He couldn't be.
"I'm 42, Mycroft said to John. "Elliston is no longer with us."
"Oh, I am sorry," John said. Devi yanked out Chalmers's hair. He yelped. Then Wollstonecraft's. He wondered if they all had the same mother, or for that matter the same father. It didn't seem possible.
"Oh yes, same parents," Mycroft said. "Frozen embryos.
Devi is working on the next one. Girl again?" he asked her. Devi patted her stomach.
2 months. We still can't determine the genes for autism or antisocial personality disorder, unfortunately, so we selected out all the males. Girls are sturdier."
"Your conclusions are faulty," Sherlock said. "Wollstonecraft is a sociopath too. She just directs her energies less usefully."
"Oh, now, watch your mouth," Chalmers said.
"This again," Wollstonecraft said without animation. "Slutting around when she could be studying," Sherlock said. "I see you have another piece of arm candy. Can this one tie his shoes?"
John looked at Chalmers' shoes involuntarily. He was wearing slip-on loafers.
"For such a bright fellow, you have an awfully hard time with active listening," Wollstonecraft said, cupping her hand behind her ear. "One more time. Sex is healthy, normal, and good for you. Far better than, for example, cocaine. Trying out different sexual partners doesn't dissolve your facial bones."
"Hear, hear," Tammy said. "Come here, darling girl."
Wollstonecraft crossed the room and kissed her mother. "Has he cracked the safety seal on his willy yet?" she asked Tammy.
"Boys don't mature as fast as girls, dear. He'll be ready when he's ready."
"Oh," Chalmers said, giving the word 5 or 6 syllables. "Well, that's the one that's still a virgin, then. Oh, that's so funny." Wollstonecraft ignored him. John, for his part, was stuck back on selecting out the male embryos. Growing their children in a lab. The entire family was a big eugenics project.
"Yes," Mycroft said. "Our branch, anyway."
Would they have selected out Sherlock and Darwin, given the choice?
Can't tell what you're thinking, but you're probably right," Mycroft said, smiling over his scotch.
"Would you stop that?" John said, pushed past Baring. He unclenched his fist. His nails left painful lines in his palm. He moved to the sofa beside Sherlock and Darwin, where he found Sherlock whispering inaudibly to his brother.
"Look at that. They're so cute together," Tammy said to Wollstonecraft. "Finally, your brother has a friend."
"Yes, adorable," Wollstonecraft said with naked loathing on her face. "Well done, Sherlock."
She approached the sofa anyway. "Darwin, Darwin, it's me. Can I have a hug, Darwin?" Wollstonecraft asked. Darwin didn't react.
"What did you tell him?" she demanded of Sherlock.
"Nothing. He doesn't like you because he's an extremely intelligent young man," Sherlock said. Wollstonecraft's mouth twisted. "Fine, do whatever you want, Darwin. Mycroft, make me a drink. Something strong."
Of course, sister. Freshener, John? That must be getting warm. John looked at his glass. Sure.
And she reeks of his cologne, Sherlock whispered to Darwin. What a stink.
Darwin rubbed his nose on his sleeve. Drinks all round. John watched what Mycroft did this time. A drop of bitters rolled around the glass and then topped off with soda water for John, a sweet martini for Wollstonecraft, plain soda water for Sherlock, who accepted the glass wordlessly, vodka and pomegranate juice garnished with a twist of lime for Tammy, soda water and muddled mint for Devi, scotch and water for Nehemiah, who hadn't bothered to greet his eldest daughter and was still absorbed in his book. Darwin, eyes closed, took Sherlock's glass and drank from it.
I'd like, Chalmers started to say. Mycroft didn't say anything, but John could see his neck tense slightly.
No, Wollstonecraft chided him. Let Mycroft do his party trick.
Chalmers really should have shut up, John thought, as Mycroft mixed him a Long Island iced tea, heavy on the tea and light on the ice. Really, when you met a Holmes, wasn't it just good manners and self-preservation to let them do their thing?
Darwin was stroking John's jacket again, eyes cracked open. John smiled without trying for eye contact. The butler reappeared.
Easter Holmes and Olivia Grant.
Olivia, without her bees, was a plain grey woman in tweeds. She smiled at the collected family and sat in the chair next to Tammy. Easter ran in and jumped straight on Mycroft, who swung her into the air.
Teeny tiny! Mycroft cried.
No, I'm big now. I can reach the telescope eyepiece, Easter said.
She was a sturdy-looking girl with long brown hair and two braids.
Thank you for my pony. She's lovely.
She wound her arms around Mycroft's neck.
Oh, a pony. I was never allowed a pony, Wollstonecraft said.
That's because they're useless, Sherlock called out.
Tell me about your pony, Wollstonecraft said.
Her name is Susie, and she has spots, and she can jump really high.
Mycroft smiled. And what do we promise?
Always wear a helmet, so I don't scramble my brain, Easter said.
Swimming, piano, entomology, a trainable dog, Sherlock said.
Ponies are cuter, Mycroft said.
Easter stuck out her tongue.
Tammy clapped her hands. Dinner.
Hennemore? Ah, nannies. There you are.
Two middle-aged ladies in sensible clothing entered, one extending her hand to Easter and the other to Darwin.
Can't I eat with Mycroft? Easter asked.
We're having onion soup, Mycroft replied. Smell it. Easter made a spectacular yucky face and let Mycroft put her down. Darwin held on to Sherlock, though.
Would you like me to come up and have dinner with you? Sherlock asked him.
Yes. I'll just take him up, Mrs. Field.
And then come back down, Sherlock, Tammy said.
Sherlock stood up with Darwin clamped to his side. Of course. After dinner. John wasn't quite sure if he should follow, but then decided he would rather get thrown out than stay in this room alone, and stood.
This is a family dinner, Sherlock, Tammy said with steel in her voice. You'll join us.
There was no trace of slur. Darwin's hands fluttered against Sherlock's jacket. He slid around Sherlock's back and stroked John's hair. John ruffled Darwin's hair in return, and Darwin ducked away.
I'll be right back down then, Sherlock said. Darwin would like some onion soup, thank you, Mrs. Field.
Yes, dear, I know.
John stayed then, as Sherlock walked Darwin upstairs. He finished his drink, it was really rather nice, and Mycroft made him another, very complicated, involving a number of little bottles, not very strong, but interestingly tasty. Chalmers was already halfway through his drink. Mistake. Wollstonecraft had barely touched hers.
Is this your first visit here as well, Chalmers? John asked.
I'm sorry, John Watson. He extended his hand. Chalmers shook it.
I've only been dating Wally for a couple of months. What about you and... Shelley? He grinned as if he had said something clever. We're just flatmates. Well, and I help him with his cases. Sherlock's a consulting detective. A private dick? Chalmers snorted under his breath. Really? If he came back with detecting privates, John wasn't even going to make the effort. Is he any good? Chalmers asked. That always seemed rather seedy as a profession. Well, did you hear about the Vermeer that was proved fake? The serial suicides that were actually murders? Actually, the most interesting ones I can't even talk about due to the Official Secrets Act, John said, carefully not looking at Mycroft. That covered Moriarty and the Bruce Partington papers. What, really? Really, Wollstonecraft confirmed. Sherlock's clever, yes. He's just an ass. And he's not very smart where it counts. How can you stand to live with him? I'm a soldier. Without a certain amount of excitement, I don't know what to do with myself.
You're all so smart, I don't know what to do,
Tammy said, sounding slurred again.
All my babies. You're going to take over the world some day.
John did look at Mycroft then. Mycroft smiled serenely. Sherlock returned. So did the butler. Dinner is served, she said.
Tammy did not, thank God, try to seat them male-female or anything like that. No, she placed Nehemiah at the head of the table, herself at the foot, and Mycroft's assistant, Wollstonecraft, and Chalmers to her left, Olivia, John, Sherlock, and Devi to her right. Nehemiah brought his book to the table and ignored them thoroughly. Mycroft's assistant, what was her name today, anyway? Set her blackberry by her plate and did, actually, pick up utensils, instead of leaning over and scarfing her food hands-free. John had wondered a bit. First course was tiny bowls of French onion soup. Delicious. I suppose being covered in bees is fairly routine for a beekeeper, he ventured to Olivia.
Yes, when you're moving a queen, she said.
Is it that they don't sting you, or you don't mind?
They don't sting. Stinging is fatal for a bee, of course. They're all related, the sister bees, so it's in their genetic interest to protect the hive.
Well, that was creepy. John sipped his water.
How are your marks, Wollstonecraft? Mycroft asked her.
Like you don't know?
Just making conversation, sister.
My marks are perfect.
Excellent, Mycroft said.
How's the world domination? Wollstonecraft asked. Was it you that spilled that oil in the Gulf of Mexico?
Really, how absurd, Mycroft said.
Why would Mycroft do any such thing? He's busy arming the Iranians, Sherlock said.
Good God, the notions you two have. You should write novels.
Mycroft leaned back in his chair and swirled his glass of wine, smiling.
Do you have a profession? Sherlock asked Chalmers. Or plan to?
Well, I don't need to, Chalmers said. He was well into his glass of wine. Possibly not the smartest decision after what must have been 5 ounces of spirits.
Daddy might give me a company, though.
I'm sure you'll do delightfully.
John could hear the sarcasm in Sherlock's voice, but it didn't look like Chalmers did.
If you and Mycroft let him, why can't you mind your own affairs? Why always poke your nose in? Wollstonecraft said.
Yeah, Chalmers seconded.
I suppose justice is a fairly abstract concept, difficult to comprehend, Sherlock said.
I only ever try to help, dear sister, Mycroft said.
Wollstonecraft looked at Chalmers. He drained his glass and held it up for a refill. Big mistake, John thought. Very big.
Second course was deconstructed sushi in a French style, with tarragon and creme fraiche, flavoured with horseradish. At least that's what Sherlock muttered to him, and John was in no particular position to argue. It was good, anyway.
John tried small talk again. Mrs. Holmes, Sherlock never mentioned you were American. How did you end up here?
Tammy fluttered. Oh, Daddy's Irish. We were always crossing the pond. Then I met Nehemiah, and, well, it was love at first sight.
See, have us complete again, dear Nan, Nehemiah said.
But I'm so glad the kid's got his accent instead of mine. It makes you seem so above it all.
Should I switch, Mama?
Sherlock asked in what sounded to John like a perfect copy of Tammy's accent.
I could switch.
Tammy laughed.
Sherlock, you're such a hoot.
Sherlock looked annoyed.
Thank you, baby, but I like my English brood, she said.
Sherlock's such a good mimic, Wollstonecraft said. I used to find him in Mummy's dressing room all the time, trying on dresses and makeup. Chalmers snorted with laughter, spluttering over his plate. Devi slid her water glass closer to her plate, away from Chalmers, disgust evident in the slight wrinkle at the bridge of her nose.
Yes, Sherlock said, back to his normal voice. I've always been interested in the principles of recognition, gender, and disguise.
Do you still wear frocks? Wollstonecraft inquired.
When the situation calls for it, Sherlock said. I'd be a fool to overlook any route to the solution of a case.
He did have a rather pretty dress in his closet. John had gone in looking for a spare shirt when Sherlock had dirtied John's entire small wardrobe. But given that it was jammed in next to a Russian peasant shirt and the fluffy yellow top to a chicken suit, it hadn't really stood out. Sherlock's real wardrobe consisted of 10 beautiful shirts and 3 stunning suits hung in dry cleaning bags off a hook in the ceiling. They never saw the inside of the closet. John coveted Sherlock's wardrobe, except, of course, if he wore anything like that, he'd look like a bag of old laundry. There was a reason he stuck to comfortable jumpers. Except today, of course, when Sherlock had strong-armed him into a good jacket and tie, but, damn it, he was already creased.
You were all such pretty children, Tammy said. And now look at you, so handsome.
Wally is beautiful, Chalmers said.
Third course was roasted wild boar. John didn't know wild boars still existed.
How many courses? He whispered to Sherlock behind his hand.
Sherlock blotted his mouth with a napkin. Just cheese and dessert, he murmured behind the cloth. John tapped Sherlock's shoe in thanks. He could stuff himself then. He'd never had boar. He didn't want to make an ass of himself, filling up if there were still 6 courses to go. Mycroft was watching him and Sherlock. Well, fine. This makes me wish I could cook, John said to Sherlock.
Cooking isn't difficult, but it's repetitive and time-consuming. I agree, though. This is good.
Cooking is nurturing, Olivia said. Devi nodded. Cooking is a social bonding act. It creates intimacy. Sherlock, you should cook for John. John started to say they weren't involved, but Sherlock touched him with his shoe. All right then, Sherlock would take it.
What's more intimate, protein or sweets? Sherlock asked Devi.
Chocolate is associated with sexual desire, but so is shellfish, whereas cake is associated with mother.
I don't know. I can't think of any research.
Devi patted her pockets, but apparently she didn't have her electronics.
What do you find, Wollstonecraft? Sherlock asked.
I don't cook. I create intimacy through being intimate, she answered.
Chalmers laughed.
Right, she said.
He gestured with his wine glass, probably his third glass.
Still a virgin. Ha ha ha.
He slipped, slamming his glass down so hard half of it splashed. Nehemiah actually looked up from his book.
Refill,
Chalmers said.
He only has 2 jokes? He used that one earlier, Mycroft said.
Pity. I do enjoy your bow.
Shut up, Mycroft, Wollstonecraft said.
Yes, shut up, Labour. Let the Tories talk, Chalmers said.
Mycroft raised his eyebrows and sipped his wine. Wollstonecraft moved Chalmers' glass away, but he snatched it back.
No, Chalmers said. I'm having a good time.
Right now you are, Wollstonecraft said acidly. Message for you, sir, Mycroft's assistant said. She passed him a BlackBerry, and he examined it, head cocked to one side. Three-patch problem, John thought.
God, that's so rude, reading at table, Chalmers said, slurring his words more noticeably.
He elbowed Wollstonecraft so hard she dropped her fork on the floor. Nehemiah looked up from his book again, his grey eyebrows knotted. My father has earned his little ways, Mycroft said without looking up. He typed something and gave the BlackBerry back to his assistant.
Or were you addressing me?
He smiled without humour. John glanced at Sherlock. Sherlock was watching the byplay, his dinner abandoned, his hands folded under his chin. He brushed his shoe by John's without looking at him.
I think you're making fun of me, Chalmers accused Mycroft.
Am I? Chalmers, shut up, Wollstonecraft said. Chalmers stood, wobbling.
I will not, woman. Your brothers are cocks and defectives.
Really? Who is who? Mycroft asked. Wollstonecraft stared at Chalmers.
You're a cock,
Chalmers said, and he staggered down the table and punched Mycroft in the face with surprising force. John didn't need to look. Sherlock dived under the table. He dived over the top. Foot on the chair, foot on the table, bad table manners, but with his next step he was bringing the drunken fucker down. Sherlock got Chalmers into an arm lock, harmless, so John saw to Mycroft, who was spitting blood. Wollstonecraft sighed.
Hannemore!
Tammy shouted. Let me see, John told Mycroft. Not that he had to. Mycroft turned his face up readily. John checked his eyes and nose for obvious damage. No cuts. Can you open your mouth?
Yes, actually, Mycroft said. He opened and closed his mouth to demonstrate.
Behind them, Sherlock was wrestling Chalmers out of the room, accompanied by Mycroft's assistant. Wollstonecraft didn't budge. Teeth feel okay? John asked. You're bleeding into your mouth, cuts on the inside. You'll need x-rays to check for a fracture to the bones or the roots of the teeth. Of course I will, Doctor, Mycroft said, smiling with the other side of his mouth. Well done.
Wollstonecraft, can't we see one dinner through to the end? Just once? Can I have a pleasant dinner with my children? Everyone out!
Tammy shouted. She burst into tears. Wollstonecraft burst into tears as well, louder and incorporating more hysterical sobbing. Mycroft stood, pressing his napkin to his mouth. John stayed with him, one hand on Mycroft's shoulder, tracking the movements of his jaw. Devi and Nehemiah exited via a different door. Sherlock was alone in the hall. I win. I didn't make Mummy cry, he said.
Yes, but we missed a particularly fine chocolate ghetto, Mycroft said, wiping the blood from his lip.
Sherlock looked Mycroft up and down. You won't miss it. You've put on half a stone. Come on, John. I've already called the car.
John and Sherlock were chauffeured home. Neither of them really felt like waiting for a taxi. They looked at each other in the back of the car.
Give us a hug, John said. Sherlock rolled his eyes. No, really, give us a hug. I'm feeling shaky. That was the seventh circle of hell back there.
Seventh, yes. Violence. But Sherlock shifted closer and wrapped an arm around his waist.
Better? John leaned against Sherlock's shoulder and sighed out the tension.
Much. What's going to happen to Chalmers?
Be killed, probably. I don't know.
Your sister was crying.
Sherlock looked away silently for a moment and then sniffed. He looked at John with fat tears rolling down his cheeks. He buried his face in John's hair.
Yes, yes, I get it. You can do that and so can she. Stop that. You're freaking me out.
John shrugged him off his shoulder. "But I just love you so much," Sherlock sobbed.
"Oh, God, that is disturbing."
"She doesn't give a toss about her lovers," Sherlock said, back to normal.
"Well, what do you care if she does or not? It's such a waste. She could be doing something useful."
John looked at the ceiling.
"Well, if she's that much like you, I bet she's dynamite in bed."
He met Sherlock's eye with both eyebrows raised. Sherlock looked genuinely confused. "You think I would be dynamite in bed?"
"No, no, you'd be rubbish," John said. Sherlock frowned in offence. "I'm saying if she brings your level of energy to the proceedings."
"But that's so utterly useless. What possible good can sex bring to the world?"
"I forgot, you're a noted philanthropist," John said.
Sherlock made a frustrated noise and threw himself in the opposite corner of the back seat. He wriggled, tossing his knees this way and that, and finally stretched out almost full length, with his shoes pressed to the window on John's side. He tapped his hands on his stomach and his left foot on the window. John slid a little closer to the middle so he didn't have Sherlock's feet in his face.
"What can I say? I think sluttery is a perfectly valid hobby. If I looked that good, I wouldn't even wear trousers," John said.
"Tiny, tiny brain."
"Giant cock," John said. Sherlock convulsed with annoyance. "Put your seatbelt on. It's the law."
The following morning, John received a call from Tammy.
"Hi, sugar. Sherlock never answers his phone, but I'm sure you don't mind taking a message."
"No, ma'am, not at all," John answered.
"Oh, you soldier boys just kill me. So polite."
"Well, tell Sherlock the test results came in, and he's just got to stop smoking or he will break my heart."
"No, he's on the patch," John said.
"He cheats. We can tell from his hair. Probably a pipe or a hooker. He loves making things complicated. So let him know he's going to get an earful if he doesn't stop properly, okay?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"And since he's quit the cocaine for a whole year, he can have his allowance back. We'll deposit it in his account tomorrow morning. Give him a kiss from me, okay?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Come up again soon. You're a doll."
She kissed into the phone and hung up.
John went downstairs and found Sherlock unearthing his webcam from the stacks of books that had swallowed it. He leaned over and kissed Sherlock on the cheek. Sherlock wrinkled his nose.
"You've been talking to Mummy, then?"
"She says congratulations for quitting the cocaine. You can have your allowance back."
Sherlock slammed his hands down on the desk.
"I don't want an allowance. I'm not a child. I didn't quit for her."
"Why did you quit?"
"Lestrade started strip-searching me every time I showed up at a crime scene. It's uncomfortable and time-wasting."
"What is your allowance, anyway?"
"I'm not taking it. I hate money."
"Right," John said, thinking about Sherlock's £2,000 coat and the daily £20 cab fares.
Sherlock turned on the webcam and John's laptop.
"What are you using that for?" John asked.
"Calling Darwin. I didn't say good night."
"Oh, right. Usually people use those for online sex chats."
"I use it to talk to my brother," Sherlock said.
He started some programs and John put the kettle on. The kettle regularly disappeared and John regularly found it in Sherlock's bed. Best not to ask.
"Good morning, Mrs. Field. Where's Darwin?"
"He didn't sleep well last night. You didn't say good night and he kept looking for you."
"I know. I'm sorry."
He really was sorry, John thought.
"But I'll go get him. Just a moment."
John made the tea while Sherlock waited. While he was thinking about it, he wrote, "Lots of veg, especially broccoli," on the shopping list on the fridge.
"Darwin, I'm sorry, I am," Sherlock said.
John set down the tea by Sherlock. On the screen, Darwin was looking off to the side. He favoured Mycroft, John thought. Same funny nose. The eyes were really what distinguished him from his siblings, though. They were vague, not really looking at anyone, rather than piercing and calculating. There was some trouble at dinner, and I had to leave quickly. It felt like how fluorescent looks. Darwin nodded. I'm going to come up soon. Would you like a new game? Darwin shook his head and made a gesture with his hands. It didn't seem like a sign language that John had ever seen. Maybe just signs between brothers then, a private language. Have you had breakfast? Can I read to you? Yes, we've had breakfast, Mrs. Field interjected. He'd lie to you if he hadn't. You'd break your routine for me? You're my favourite brother too. Darwin smiled, head still turned aside. Then we were on and. Sherlock picked up the OED and began reading the entry out. He read for a full hour before saying goodbye. He looked over at John, who was sitting in his accustomed place across the desk once he'd closed the computer. Don't patronise us, Sherlock said. What? You were going to say how good I am with my poor crippled brother, or how sweet that was, or some variation. Was not, John said. Sherlock drank his cold tea. They want more Mycrofts and Allistons, but instead they had us. 4 brain disorders in a row. Number 5 is sure to follow. Not that I would change myself or Darwin, but we're not what they wanted. Alliston? John ventured. Sherlock sneered and flung himself violently back in his chair. The springs quacked in protest. I don't want to talk about Alliston. Right, bad subject. Maybe later. Easter seems all right. Without her medication, she's completely anhedonic. Anhedonic, unable to feel pleasure. That sounded like major depression. Very unusual in a 7-year-old. Poor kid. Father would do so much better if he weren't so racist. Devi's genetics are far better than Mummy's, Sherlock said. My tea is cold. Kettle's in the kitchen. Sherlock sipped from his mug, scowling at John. So you want your father to cheat on your mother with his assistant? John asked. Cheating is a social construct that has no place in my family home. Oh. But father thinks the brown races are inferior. Amazing how someone can be so intelligent and not see what lies right in front of them. Amazing, John said. And she still lets him use her as a living incubator? She must love him. Anything that irrational comes down to romantic love. John thought for a second, and then shivered. All right, I have the creeps. He stood up and shook it out. Can you love somebody if you think they're an inferior? I'm actually asking you. I don't know the answer, Sherlock said. He stood and looked out the window, unable to meet John's eye. Something else he had in common with his brother. Well, John said, I don't know. Not real love, I don't think. I think real love has to be between equals. And if you don't think someone is as good as you are, that's a problem. Mycroft thinks so too. If you agree, he must be right. So annoying, Sherlock muttered. He grimaced at his tea. Tea, John. Kettle's in the kitchen. John sat back down and regarded Sherlock. Sherlock drained the mug and set it down on the desk. This is why I don't love anyone. Except Darwin. Do I? John smiled. Yes, that's what that emotion is. Ah, Sherlock said. John wasn't at all surprised when £6,000 arrived in his bank account instead. He paid Mrs. Hudson a few months in advance and then hired a firm to clean the chemical stains off the ceiling. Don't give in to their bribery, Sherlock yelled from the sofa. No, dear. And get me some more elemental sodium. I'm out. Yes, dear. The end.